digital LEDs pulse and flicker, finally resting on the number 24.
Previously on 24.
America has been victimized again. Last night's terrorist attack in San Antonio is now the latest in this series of bombings that began 11 weeks ago in 10 different cities.
The bus explodes spectacularly.
Retrieve the package. Call me when you have it.
Ahmed, the Muslim teenager, is attacked in his home.
What happened?
You shouldn't have come here, Scott. I don't want to hurt you. But I will, unless you do exactly what I say.
I'm Mr. Alvazani's attorney. There are no terrorists here. Yes, it's Sandra Palmer. I'd like to speak with my brother. The FBI was just here, and they wanted access to the IAA's personnel records.
You know I have to do whatever I can to stop these attacks. All that includes giving law enforcement the authority to follow up on every single lead they get.
I can't find the files.
They've been erased. Don't bother trying to recall them. I use the shredding program.
Sandra, what are you doing?
You're under arrest. Take Mr. Alrazani into custody.
Wait a minute. He has nothing to do with this.
Don't move. Where is Assad?
Put down your weapon.
I came here alone. Fayed set you up. He provided CTA with the coordinates to this house. Move! Move!
I've gotten most of my people and the governments that support us to agree to a ceasefire with the West.
And that's what Fayed wants to sabotage.
Yes. But finding Fayed is the key. These are Fayed's men.
They're going in the subway. Can't let him get on that train.
Only the bomber is getting on the train. The other man is the handler.
You follow the handler, I'm going after the bomber.
The bomber prepares to press his handheld detonator. Jack intervenes. They fight. As the bomber is about to press the button, Jack manages to kick him out through the rear door of the subway train. The bomb makes a fireball in the tunnel, but no one besides the bomber is hurt.
We're heading in your direction.
I copy that. I'll find you. Just stay with the handler. He's our only connection to Fayed.
The following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m.
Jack vaults over a low wall and runs across a road to where Assad sits in the parked car. Jack gets into the front passenger seat.
You still have Fayed's man in sight?
He's in a gray sedan, about six cars ahead.
A small silver car pulls out onto the sunlit freeway running below the hills of L.A. The handler sits at the wheel of his car. He takes a call on his mobile.
Yes.
Are you on schedule?
Yeah, there was some traffic around Union Station, but I'm on the road now.
There has been a change. I need you to make that stop in Newhall before you come back here. The Americans will be feeling helpless now. I'm making the call.
The casualty estimate in St. Louis has risen to 112. The mall attack in Baltimore is even worse. Over 200 dead. Many of them children.
My God. What about the bomb in Los Angeles?
We've confirmed that Jack Bauer averted the attack at Union Station. Passive surveillance from Metro Transit has also confirmed he's working with Assad.
Have you been able to make contact with him?
No, sir. Jack's been dark since he called to warn us about Fayed and we didn't listen.
I didn't listen.
Receiving a call from Fayed, he's demanding to speak with the president.
Mr. President, we're receiving a call on a scrambled channel from Fayed, sir. He's demanding to speak with you.
Put him on.
President Palmer moves to the speakerphone. Karen Hayes and Tom Lennox look on.
This is President Palmer.
Mr. President, we've proven we can strike at you anytime, anywhere. But I'm prepared to offer you a ceasefire. If you meet my demands.
Your demands? Fayed, we met your demands before, remember? When you deceived us about Assad being the one behind these attacks, and now you expect me to just accept your assurances of a ceasefire.
I expect you will take any action that holds a promise of avoiding the loss of more American lives.
What do you want?
You're holding 110 so-called enemy combatants at your Palmdale military facility in violation of international law. You must have all these freedom fighters on a non-military aircraft in the air by the end of the hour. The pilot will be informed of the destination once the plane is outside your country's airspace.
Even if I agree to this, there is not enough time for us
to find a way. Because if you don't release the prisoners by the deadline, the consequences will be immediate and devastating. I will only make this offer once, Mr. President. For your country's sake, I hope you accept it.
Is it even possible, Karen, that's what these attacks have been about? Releasing the prisoners at Palmdale?
Sir, I feel it's wishful thinking to assume this is Fayad's endgame.
Bill, contact Palmdale.
Find out exactly what would be involved in making this happen.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, you cannot seriously consider giving in to this man's demands. I mean, you said yourself, Fayad cannot be trusted.
No, he can't. And Tom, I do not believe for one second he has any intention of stopping his attacks. Not permanently. But going along with this buys us more time to find Fayad. At the very least, it gives the country a respite from the bombings.
Sir, you'd be releasing 110 extremely dangerous terrorists.
Karen, I am very well aware of that. But unless we find Fayad, I may be forced to.
Karen and Tom both look concerned and skeptical. 8:06, the handler drives along a street in a slightly down-at-heel business area. Assad and Jack follow.
We got a problem.
What?
He's heading north. The farther he gets outside of the city, the less traffic we'll have to hide in. It's going to be more difficult to track him all the way to Fayad without him seeing us.
What else can we do?
We need to call CTU. They can give us satellite coverage.
No, I said no, CTU. They killed my men. They tried to kill me.
That's because Fayad made them believe you were behind the bombings.
I will not work with my enemies.
You're working with one now. You might hate this country, you might hate its values, but if you were serious about disarming, about bringing your organization and others to the table, then you know you have to compromise. That is your political reality.
What's to say they won't put me in prison once they have me?
I can't tell you they won't, but right now, that is our only lead to Fayad.
Assad agonizes.
Make the call.
Thank you.
End of part one.
Morse, I need you to load this.
What is it?
The president just got a call from Fayad. He's demanding we release all the prisoners from Palmdale. We need to vet each one of them in case he goes through with it.
Well, he won't. There's some pretty serious high-grade terror suspects at Palmdale. No one's letting him go.
Excuse me. Are you refusing to do this?
I think you should give this to one of the girls in archives. I'm working up Fayad threads. That's more important.
Okay. I don't really care what you think is important. It's not your place to tell me what's important.
Just calm down. I'm trying to help you do your job. You have to evaluate directives that come down. You can't just keep wasting the time of your most important analyst.
I'm not wasting.
Morris.
What? What?
I want triple filters on each one of these files. If I don't have results on my screen in 20 minutes, you are out of here.
Grow up. O'Brien.
Chloe, this is Jack.
Jack. I didn't think I'd ever hear your voice again.
Boy, I don't have a lot of time. I need to speak to Bill Buchanan.
Hold on.
Buchanan.
It's Jack on line one.
Jack, where are you?
I'm in a car with Assad. We're tracking one of the suspects in the train bombing.
Jack, we know you're working with Assad. Are you sure you can trust him?
I think so.
What do you need, Jack?
Suspects on Florence crossing Ormond. We believe he's ultimately going to lead us to Fayad, but we need Chloe to give us satellite support.
Logging onto the NSC server now.
Jack, Fayad just contacted President Palmer and demanded he release the prisoners we're holding at Palmdale.
What's the president's position?
If we don't find Fayad by the 9 a.m. deadline, I believe he'll go through with it.
It's going to take me at least 10 minutes to get satellite coverage. I had to send the repositioning orders for the subserver.
That's too long. The suspect is entering Route 7. If we try to follow him, he'll see us.
Chloe, can you speed up access?
No, the SATQ's overloaded. The entire country's on high alert.
Right, we'll use Caltrans cameras to track him until the satellite can reposition.
If there was a traffic cam on Route 7, there isn't. I already looked.
Jack, you're going to have to figure out another way to track him until we get the satellite up.
Where's your nearest TAC team?
Curtis has a unit
12 miles away.
Send him in my direction. I'll get back to you.
Do you think this man will recognize you?
No. What do you have in mind?
All right, thanks. Manning on comm.
Curtis, I just spoke to Jack. He's surveilling one of Fayad's men and needs backup.
Where is he?
Last known was Florence Boulevard near the entrance to Route 7. He's running this operation with Assad.
Did I hear that correctly? We're working with Assad?
Your orders are to rendezvous with them and lend support. All warrants on Assad are rescinded for the time being. Understood? Curtis?
Run away.
Jack commandeers a vehicle.
Don't get up.
A Having thrown the owner onto the roadway, he now speeds off in the white SUV. He does a handbrake turn and swerves into a line of traffic. He overtakes, heading straight for an oncoming car. The two vehicles swerve out of each other's way at the last possible moment. Jack swerves down a side alley and smashes through a pile of pallets. The handler continues driving slowly, tailed by Assad. Jack powers down a sandy alley. The handler drives calmly through an industrial zone. He indicates to turn right. Jack heads at speed towards a metal gate which opens onto the road along which the handler is continuing. Jack speeds out and smashes straight into the side of the handler's car, sending him smashing into a row of parked vehicles. Assad pulls up at a slight distance behind. Jack gets out of the SUV.
Hey! What's wrong with you? I know you saw me coming.
It was my right of way!
You tell me I don't know how to drive? I'm talking to you!
Hey, you all right? I saw the whole thing.
Get out of here. This has got nothing to do with you.
I'm a witness. You drove straight into him.
What is it with you people? You're gonna stick up for him?
Fine. I wait here until the police arrive.
Screw both of you. Screw you!
Where are you going? Hey! Hey, this is your fault!
I saw his license for the police. I can't wait for the police. I can't drive this. I need to be somewhere. I'll just have to deal with this later.
Where are you going?
Newhall. I was getting on Route 7.
So was I. I can take you to Newhall. I'll drop you there. Come.
Come. Thank
you. The handler seems somewhat uncertain, but judges that he has no choice. 8:11. As the handler reaches inside the wrecked car for his effects, Assad heads back towards his own car and dials a number on his mobile. He secretes the live phone in the side pocket of the car door as he gets behind the wheel. The handler, meanwhile, climbs into the front passenger seat. Assad drives off. Jack pulls over in his SUV and takes the call.
I hope you're not going to let that bastard get away with this. Hit and run is a crime. You must file a police report.
I know.
Jack picks up Assad's conversation with the handler. The handler takes in Assad's lecture morosely. Jack puts them on hold and dials.
This is Jack Bauer. I need to speak with Bill Buchanan.
Hopefully. Buchanan.
Bill, it's Jack. Fayed's man is now in a car with Assad.
What happened?
The suspect was involved in a traffic incident. Now listen to me. Assad has left his cell phone open so that we can monitor the call. I'm going to be following roughly 2 miles behind in a white Jeep Cherokee. Through conversations with the suspect, Assad will let us know where he's going. I'm ready to transfer you into the call.
Go ahead, Jack.
Bill, they can't hear us on our side. You should be on the call now.
I don't know Newhall very well. I need you to guide me, please.
I will.
Claudia, do an all-agency data pull on Newhall. Set up parameters for a sort. Chloe, when we get satellite, make sure we have coverage of that area. Let Curtis know that he's to intercept Jack somewhere on Route 7 on the way to Newhall.
Fayed.
What is it?
Our scout is reporting increased activity around the Palmdale military prison. The transport buses are starting to arrive.
Good. By the time our jailed brothers are boarded on the aircraft, it'll be too late for the Americans to realize what's happened.
We still don't have the component.
We will. Ahmed should be on his way to pick it up now.
Fayed remains looking contemplatively at his computer screen. 8:14. Ahmed leads Scott at gunpoint in through the front door to Scott's family home.
Scott, is that you?
Yeah.
Honey, we were beginning to get worried. My God, Ahmed, what happened?
Oh, he has a gun.
What's going on? What is this?
Where's Ray?
Just put the gun down and tell me what's happening.
Call him.
Ray?
Yeah. What the hell? I don't want to hurt any of you, but I will unless you do exactly what I say. You're a nurse, right? You have medical supplies, bandages.
Yeah.
Go get them. Now!
Ahmed holds the gun to Scott's head. Jillian obeys.
You two, on the couch. Now, come on.
Ahmed drops his bag and then glares at Ray.
Sit down. Now.
Ray complies. Gillian returns with the first aid kit.
I need you to patch this leg. Stop the bleeding.
I forgot Stan was right. You are a terrorist.
Stan's dead. He killed him.
What? I can't stop this bleeding.
Don't tell me that you can't.
The wound's too deep. You have muscle tissue damage. You need to see a doctor.
Just bandages.
Ahmed kicks his bag over to Ray.
There's a package in there. I'm supposed to take it to a man who has an item for me.
Pressed.
Obviously, I can't do that now, so you're gonna have to.
I'm not leaving you alone with my family.
Your family will be safe when you do what I say. When you pick up the item, you'll call me and I'll give you further instructions.
Gillian, near tears, continues working on Ahmed's wounded thigh. Scott appears to be in shock. Ray takes the package out of Ahmed's bag.
What's in this package?
That's none of your concern. You're just making a drop. Grab that phone and come here. Come here, come here. Understand this. If I see anyone, police, FBI, anybody outside this house, or if you take too long, your wife and son are dead. Do you understand me? Look at me. Do you understand me?
I understand.
Where am I going? There's an address in the front pocket of that backpack. It's a man named Marcus.
Ray unfolds a sheet of paper from the backpack and then looks desperately from his son to his wife.
Go!
Ray leans down and kisses Gillian goodbye. He gets to the front door. Gillian, Ray, and Scott exchange desperate looks. Ray leaves. 8:21. President Palmer, Assad, and Curtis, each in their own location, all look equally grave. Chloe works seriously at her computer.
Curtis, how far away are you?
Less than 5 minutes.
Get there as fast as you can. Assad and Fayed's men are on open road. They're already 5 miles ahead.
Got it.
Oh, darling.
What?
Since when did you take Milo's side against me?
Oh, you're doing it again.
And what's that, my lovely?
You pick on your bosses whenever you get stressed out.
Milo's not my boss. Heaven forbid.
Well, he might as well be. He could bounce you, which is what I think you really want sometimes.
And why would I want that?
I don't know. It's your character flaw, not mine.
Morris, thoughtful, approaches Milo.
The files you wanted are all unlocked. They'll be on your screen in a minute.
Good.
Milo and Morris eye each other in a wry standoff. Wayne Palmer sits deep in thought in the Oval Office. On a side table sits a photo of his statesmanlike elder brother.
Mr. President, I just got off the phone with CTU. They've reconnected with Jack Bauer.
Where is he?
He's following a man he's identified as one of Fayed's operatives. CTU is now coordinating support for Jack because they believe this man will lead them to Fayed's location.
Did CTU offer a time frame for locating Fayed?
No, sir. At this point, any estimates would be premature.
And have you spoken with the Palmdale facility?
Yes, and the airfield. If we want to meet Fayed's deadline and have these prisoners in the air before the end of the hour, we have to have them on buses and on the road within the next 10 minutes. If you still want to proceed with that option.
Listen, Karen, I know you disapprove of my decision. But unless Jack and CTU call to say they have Fayed, there is no other option here.
Karen turns a penetrating gaze on the president, who drops his eyes.
Tell them to load the buses.
Yes, Mr. President.
Karen Hayes exits the Oval Office, leaving President Palmer alone and seemingly isolated. Assad drives along the freeway towards a sign reading Sand Canyon Road.
Sand Canyon Road.
What?
I was just remembering. I had a friend who lived on Sand Canyon Road.
At CTU, Chloe processes this information. The handler looks superciliously at Assad.
We can take the service route from here.
Jack, still in the white SUV, cruises onto an area of dusty ground off the highway and parks up behind two large black SUVs. He gets out.
They're 2 miles ahead of us on the service road. We can monitor their direction with this cell phone.
CTU wants you on comm.
You copy?
10-4.
8:24. Curtis gets back behind the wheel of his SUV. Jack gets into the passenger seat.
CTU, this is Manning.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Bill, I'm with Jack. We have satellite access yet?
It's coming up. Is Jack on the line?
I'm here, Bill.
We're redirecting the NSA satellite to the area around Sand Canyon Road exit marker. As soon as we have a fix on Assad's vehicle, we'll upload it to your GPS.
Copy that.
Curtis casts an almost bashful glance at Jack.
It's good to see you, Jack. I'm sorry for what you're put through. But I'm glad you're back.
Thanks.
Now you have to work with Assad. Doesn't that bother you? The man's a terrorist, Jack. Responsible for taking hundreds, maybe thousands of innocent lives over the past 20 years. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
I don't know what means anything anymore, Curtis. I spent my whole life defending this country against people like Assad. And now he's trying to disarm his people, renounce terrorism. The playing field has changed.
That doesn't change Assad's past. We have to make sure that he pays for the crimes that he's committed.
If he's our only chance at a peaceful resolution to all of this, that might not happen. Anyway, it's not our call to make.
We'll see.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing.
Good. Ahmed is losing significant amounts of blood.
This isn't working. There's still too much pain. I need something stronger.
There are some prescription painkillers in the kitchen.
Get them. And some water. Make sure I can see you.
Scott obeys and gets up.
They're in the cabinet over the TV.
Scott comes into the kitchen and fetches a plastic pill bottle from a cupboard. Going to the sink, he takes a plastic beaker and turns on the tap. He notices a knife lying in the sink. He looks at Ahmed, who observes him. As Ahmed screws his eyes closed in pain, Scott picks up the knife and slips it into a back pocket. He comes back into the living room and hands Ahmed the pills and the water.
Kills me.
As Ahmed takes the pills, Gillian watches appalled as Scott slips the knife out from his pocket. Scott looks down at Ahmed with hatred in his eyes.
Sit down.
Scott wavers, fingering the knife behind his back. Gillian looks on tensely.
Sit down.
Sit down, sweetie.
Ahmed presses the gun to Scott's abdomen. Scott complies and returns to his armchair. Ahmed shifts painfully as he keeps the gun trained on his former friend. 8:27. End of part two. Ahmed marks his hostages. President Palmer speaks on the phone. Orange jumpsuited prisoners are herded together.
Form an orderly line. Head count will be taken. Then and only then, you'll be loaded onto those buses. Understand, any problems you cause will only delay this process. Get in line.
The hard-bitten drill sergeant eyes the lines of prisoners. One of them, who seems to stand out from the crowd, returns his gaze. President Palmer watches a video feed of the mobilization of the prisoners.
I'll tell him.
Right.
It was the FBI. Your sister, she's been arrested.
What? When?
Less than an hour ago, the FBI agents were sent to the offices of the Islamic American Alliance to serve a warrant for the personnel files. Sandra proceeded to delete them right in front of the agents. They had no choice but to arrest her.
Damn it. Where's she been taken, Tom?
She's being detained, one of our provisional facilities.
The president reaches for the phone and dials. A car comes to a stop outside a building which seems to be being besieged by peace demonstrators. The FBI agents get out and escort Sandra Palmer and Al Razani inside.
Khalid, I'm so sorry I got you into this. I deleted those files. It wasn't right for them to arrest you for my actions.
I have nothing to apologize for. You are protecting the rights of innocent Americans. It's what this country stands for, even if the government's forgotten.
In a wire-fenced compound, a soldier herds men in civilian clothes.
You take him?
Where are you taking him? Waleed.
I'll be all right.
Over here, Miss Palmer. Take off her cuffs.
As she is uncuffed, the blonde agent hands her a phone.
For you. I'll be right here.
Hello?
Please hold for the president.
What were you thinking deleting those files?
I was standing up to an unlawful seizure.
You making a point is the last thing I need today. Now I have ordered to release. Agents are waiting outside with instructions to take you back home.
I don't want to be released, Wayne. I want to fight this. Bring attention to the civil liberties that your administration has allowed to be violated.
Do you have any idea what's going on today?
Of course I do.
Innocent people are dying all over the country. And you choose now to make a civil rights case out of this.
Well, somebody has to. Look, if you're gonna release anybody, it should be Waleed.
Waleed is the head of the organization under investigation. Now, the FBI just wants to hold him until it can be determined what was in those files you deleted.
There is nothing incriminating on those files, Wayne. You have my word. Waleed is innocent.
Then Waleed has nothing to worry about, Sandra. I don't have time for this. You are released. Go home. I will call you later.
Sandra sighs in frustration and then marches purposefully back towards the blonde agent.
I need to speak with Waleed before I leave here.
That's not going to happen.
I'm his attorney. You have to give me access to him.
Don't tell me what I have to do, Miss Palmer. I'm following orders.
Waleed has rights.
Limited rights, Miss Palmer. He's being held under the revised enemy combatant statute.
Applying that statute to somebody like him is ridiculous. Is the law just being completely thrown out of the window?
When you're through with the lectures, I have orders to drive you home.
Ma'am. Sandra storms out with ill-concealed contempt. Al Razani stands in line.
Stay to the left. Once inside the secure zone, you will disrobe. After a cavity search, you'll be given back your clothing. Sir, you have to keep moving.
I don't care. I'm innocent. I want to talk to somebody in authority.
Here? We're not going to ask you again.
Hey, don't touch me.
Let him alone.
Sir, get back in line.
Not until you let go of that man. Take your hands off me. Good.
Take him to interrogation.
The original dissenter looks on compassionately as Al Razani, winded and bowed, is bundled out of the main room. 8:41, Ahmed winces in pain. President Palmer looks deeply concerned. Assad continues driving the small silver car through a quiet street. He eyes the mobile in the door pocket, then addresses the handler.
Do you live around here?
No.
Visiting relatives. Why are you asking? I need to make sure you can get back to your car.
I'll be okay.
I'll be okay. My son, he says this. He has a memory like a fish. His mother is very worried.
And the next corner, make a right. Then drop me off at the end of the street.
Did you copy that?
It's the 6500 block of Alderton. Bring up the data on all commercial and residential buildings within a half mile and then begin a pre-sort.
You mean like I'm doing already?
Right over there.
Assad turns down a side street marked not a through street. The two large black CTU SUVs cruise up and pull in before the turning. Traffic hums past on a busy road at the end of the cul-de-sac. The handler offers his hand to Assad.
All right, thanks again for your help.
Please, it's nothing. He's crossing 64th Road, heading towards the commercial district. I'm turning around.
There he is.
We've acquired the suspect on satellite.
At CTU, the screens pinpoint the tiny figure of the handler moving through the streets. Out from the lead SUV get Jack and Curtis, who has a dangerous glint in his eye as he heads across to where Assad has parked up.
Curtis, have your men set up a moving perimeter.
Collier, take your men across 64th Road. Set up a moving perimeter behind the target.
You'll be well trained. Be careful.
My men know their job.
Do I know you?
No. But I know you.
Subjects entering a commercial building one block south of where you are.
Copy that.
Borman, we're going to take Assad with us. Keep him under close watch. Search him for weapons.
Curtis, Assad is part of this operation.
Not anymore.
Wait.
Jack gestures to Curtis's agent, then turns to Assad.
I'll take care of it as soon as this is over. I promise.
Assad stares at him, then places his hands on his head to be frisked.
Thank you.
The building is a self-storage facility. One floor, 200 units.
8:44. The handler walks around a corner into an alley lined with lockups. A man in TAC team uniform crawls across a flat roof and trains a small telescope on the handler. The handler stops and bends down to undo the lock on a roll-up metal door. Armed troops close in. The handler opens the door and pulls a cover off a large object within. The black SUV pulls to a rapid halt.
Borman, keep him here.
Team leader, do you copy?
Go ahead, Collier.
I can see 2 dozen cases of ammunition. Boxes with Czech writing.
Bill, this is a dead drop. Fayed's not here.
We only have a few minutes, Jack. If the suspect is not going to lead us to Fayed in order to stop the prisoner exchange, we have to move in now. Get the information through interrogation.
Bill, that's too risky. We have no guarantee we can make him talk in time.
That's a risk we have to take. Curtis, move your men into position.
Understood. All teams, we're moving in. Silent approach, non-lethal force.
Curtis and Jack run down the alley. The handler gets out a small laptop. Soldiers with rifles take up positions on corners. The handler glances round and notices the helmet of the man on the flat roof. He picks up his briefcase and gets out a pistol. As Curtis and Jack arrive and get a bead on the handler, he aims his pistol. Bullets rip through the piles of ammunition cases. One of the TAC team is hit. The handler appears to have been wounded and disappears behind the crates.
Get out where I can see you!
Step out with your hands up!
The handler crawls out, clutching a grenade.
Curtis! Everyone back!
Jack pulls Curtis back to safety just in time before the entire stash goes up.
Look at the nearest fire hole. Get the fire department and ambulances here now. Bill, it's Jack. Suspect is dead. You're taking a laptop out of the storage unit. We'll check the hard drive, but it's been badly damaged.
Understood, Jack. I need the prisoner.
Yeah, we got the feet of the prisoners at Palmdale.
Tom Lennox holds a mobile to his ear as he and the president watch the video feed from Palmdale.
Yes.
Mr. President, I have Bill Buchanan on the line for you.
Put him on.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, we've had a setback to our operation.
What happened, Bill?
The suspect Jack was following chose to kill himself rather than be apprehended. We're examining the area for evidence, but there's no telling how long that will take or if it will lead us to Fayed, sir. I'm sorry.
So am I. Keep me informed.
Of course.
Mr. President, if you're intent on following through with this prisoner release, we await your orders.
Tom Lennox and Karen Hayes look on earnestly as Palmer agonizes.
Load them on the plane.
Tom, his face betraying his disapproval, turns to convey the order.
This is Lennox. The president's made his decision. Load the prisoners on the plane.
Headcount is correct and all men are accounted for on bus 3. I want confirmed headcounts on all other vehicles.
Come in. Bus 1, confirmed.
Roger that. We will proceed single file in an orderly manner onto the plane. There will be no mistakes. no disorder. Is that clear? Let's get these buses out of here as soon as we can. Let's move.
The sergeant jumps onto one of the buses, which then pulls away. In the rear of the bus are cages, which are now prominently featured in a way that suggests something may not be quite right. Fayed sits in front of his screen in his hideout. One of his men approaches him.
Fayed, we just heard from the airport. Our people are being loaded onto the planes. The president has given in to us.
Fayed turns with grim satisfaction to stare at a large storage case. 8:48, end of part 3. Part 4, 8:53. The orange tide of prisoners files aboard the passenger jet. The fire department quell the flames at the handler's lockup. Chloe studies her screen. A small black car pulls over to the curb. Ray checks the address and gets out, carrying Ahmed's package. He hurries along the pavement and in through the Venetian-blinded glass doors of an office.
Hello?
He goes into the back, which consists of a kind of warehouse with metal storage shelves.
Hello?
Back here.
You, Marcus.
Who are you?
I'm supposed to give this to you, and you're supposed to give me something in return.
Marcus flicks open a clasp knife and cuts open the brown paper package. Ray looks on in amazement at the quantity of bundles of banknotes which Marcus pulls out and counts.
It's not enough.
What do you mean?
Component cost me a little more than I thought it would. I'm gonna need another $50,000.
What was that? That's all he gave me.
Well, go back and get the rest.
I can't do that. Look, I need whatever it is you're selling. Please, just take the money. I am begging you.
Hey, until you get more money, we got nothing more to talk about.
Ray, beside himself, turns away, desperately trying to think what to do next.
Can I use your phone?
Yeah.
Ahmed keeps his gun trained on Scott and Jillian as they both sit tensely waiting.
Hello.
He wants another $50,000.
Tell him you don't have it.
I did, and he said to come back when I get it.
Listen to me. There is no more money. I don't care what you have to do, but you have to get that item from him. You understand what happens here if you don't, right?
Yeah, I understand.
What'd he say?
Well, he says he's gonna get the money. And before, you know, I bring it back here, he just wants to make sure you really do have it.
Marcus goes off to one of the shelves and picks out a small cardboard box. Ray, with the cunning born of desperation, reconnoiters and spots a lamp with a heavy wooden base. Marcus presents the box and pulls back the Hessian wrapping from what looks like a small item of computer circuitry.
There it is.
Ray grabs the heavy lamp and hits Marcus. Marcus staggers up and goes for his gun. Ray disarms him and throws him to the concrete floor. Ray bashes Marcus's head on the concrete.
Shut up! Just take the money! Just take it!
Ray looks down, appalled at Marcus's lifeless face and at the blood seeping from the back of his head onto his own hands. He staggers to his feet and collides with a large TV set. He looks wildly around. The component sits on the counter. Bill Buchanan walks slowly around the table at which Chloe is working. 8:57.
Okay, Jack, the hard drive is mostly toast, but I was able to recover the most recently accessed file.
Some kind of wiring schematic. How much of the file do we have?
About a page and a half, mostly in Arabic, some of it in Russian.
Get us out over here now.
Borman. Bring him.
Borman claps Assad on the shoulder, who spins around as if resentful. and then walks slowly over to where Jack looks at the screen.
You know what this is?
This is a list of electronic components, field specifications, programming instructions for a detonator. But this is for a nuclear device.
Is it even possible that Fayette could have acquired a nuclear weapon?
Our organization has tried unsuccessfully in the past. It's possible he may have found a way.
You knew about it all along, didn't you? Curtis, you knew the right thing.
Call him now!
Curtis glares at Assad.
Assad, please.
There is a reference file at the bottom of the page. Softel 3.
That's a compact bomb the Soviets made to the late 80s, referred to as a suitcase nuke.
Are they all accounted for?
Well, officially, they were all destroyed, but there was a claim that one of the devices was diverted to a nuclear scientist with suspected terrorist ties. He calls himself Saif al-Din.
Looking up his file now.
And it won't be much. Saif al-Din is a code name. It means Sword of the Faith. Intelligence never discovered his identity.
Okay, Jack, we have one surveillance photo. It's about 6 years old.
Put it up.
A picture shows the man who stood out from among the Palmdale prisoners.
Do you recognize him?
Yes. I saw him with Fayette a year ago. His name is Numer, Hassan Numer.
Chloe, did you copy that?
Looking up his name.
We need to know where this man is now.
I think we already do. Hassan Numer is a terrorist being released from the Palmdale military prison.
Nadia, get on the phone to the White House. Chloe, bring up the feed from the airfield.
This is what Fayette has been planning all along. These bombings were designed to make you free this man.
Son of a bitch. Chloe, have they freed the prisoners yet?
No, they're on the plane. It'll be a couple minutes before they're in the air.
Get me the CO at the airfield. Send it to my office. Nadia, tell the president I'm stopping the release.
This is Nadia Yassin from CTU. I need to speak to the president. Priority 3.
Al-Razani sits in the interrogation room. Ray moves Marcus's corpse.
This is Bill Buchanan. The prisoner you're looking for is Hassan Namir. I'm sending his picture to your PDA.
Roger that.
Troops hurry on board the stationary passenger jet and walk down the gangway into the cabin.
Prisoner Namir, raise your hand. I've got the photo.
The soldier checks along the row of seats.
Prisoner Namir, identify yourself now. We need to go over every square inch of this plane, and someone let the Sarge know he needs to get up here now.
The bus sits on the side of the road. The sergeant strides up to the cages at the rear. Inside the first one crouches Namir.
Hurry up. Fayette is waiting for you.
Namir hurries out through the length of the bus, passing the dead body of the driver slumped in the front. Namir, outside now, runs to the rear of the bus and peers around the corner. 9 a.m. The end.
Oh, that was epic. Day 6 continues tomorrow night at 9 here on Sky One. And yes, you've guessed it, it's a double episode. Next tonight, car chases of a different kind. It's not big and it's not clever. It's Road Wars.